This is an audiobook on MP3. The book is Boiling Point, The Breakup of the United States and Its Citizens by Tom Merritt, Part 3. A harsh sun shone on the bankrupt land the next day. It blazed flat and white on the Capitol steps in Washington, Columbia, as congressional representatives walked to a historic vote that might avert catastrophe, and it focused like a spotlight on State Senator Hank Conley in Austin. Hank, too, Austin, Texas. I walked towards the bookstore on Guadalupe Street, sweating, trying to keep my mind off the present task, while at the same time trying to gain peace and justification. I entered the store and tried not to notice the steely stare of the young man behind the counter. I walked a little stiffly, but straight and strong. My mama always said my head looked like a cantaloupe with ears and brown hair stuck on it. I wore a light cotton suit, stylish but conservative gray. I certainly didn't look like a politician. The local ABR station's Latino music program played in the background. The song came to an end, and the ABR News theme began to play. With an ABR News nutshell, I'm Greg Whitney. Minutes ago, Congress reached a compromise over federal funding. In a hastily called press conference, the president announced martial law will end in 1 month. Even so, the Texas secession bill passed the radical House and entered the Texas Senate. Oklahoma indicated that they will secede if Texas does. This has been an ABR News nutshell. I stopped when I heard the announcement and stood near the counter listening. I looked at the clerk behind the register when it finished. You think they'll really do it? Secede, I mean? I wondered if the general public knew how serious this was. Well, sir, I hope not. If we're really going to get rid of martial law, I say it'd be a shame to cause another crisis when there's no need to. Only the selfish would really want to secession right now. Only those with something to gain. I met his gaze. Yeah, you're more right about that than you know. I turned and left the store, trying to forget what the clerk had said. I walked down Guadalupe Street, lost to the world, my brain racing in high rationalization mode. I walked right past the El Patio Mexican restaurant where I was supposed to meet Bob Alvarez to talk about the prayer bill. I walked into the university area, ignoring the hurrying students and the dragworms who escaped the National Guard roundup and still begged for change and cigarettes. I almost got hit by a Metro bus as I tried to get across Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, but my mind hammered away. I've already set things in motion. I might not be able to stop it anyway. If I try to stop it, Morgan will put a stop to my career. If I don't stop it, all hell breaks loose in Texas. I get sent to Mexico and have to live with my choice. But if I try to stop it, I may get sent out of Congress, disgraced, with no way to live. I don't know how to do anything else anymore. I've already set things in motion over and over, I thought, as I cut through Slusher Park to the Capitol. I walked through the Capitol courtyard, noticing how aptly it reflected the royal ambitions of King Morgan. I finally began to get angry at the uncontrolled ambition of the Morgan crowd. I realized I had to stand up for once. I couldn't play this one at angles and try to squeeze through. It was all or nothing. I stopped short and headed for the governor's office. I rode the elevator panting, trying to control my heartbeat. I strode through the outer office, right past Kit, the receptionist, and stormed in through the governor's private office door as Kit yelled, "Mr. Conley, the governor!" Morgan stood looking out the window, his arms crossed behind his back. Weta Jackson, my party whip, sat in an overstuffed chair looking at the floor. "How you, Hank?" Morgan didn't turn from the window. "Thought you was meeting with Alvarez." "No matter." He turned around and sat down in his big stuffed chair. "Me and Weta here were just discussing the prayer bill situation. Seems she thinks we can all get together and agree on a plan. But we're almost done. What's on your mind, Hank?" Morgan looked seriously up at me. "Well," I started and stopped. Without doing a thing or hardly saying a word of any significance, Morgan had drained the resolve right out of me. Who was he? I hated him. I came to talk to you about the secession bill, I barely croaked out the words. "Oh yeah, SR 8713. Ms. Jackson and I just talked over that too. Now you know your part, Hank, and with Weta's help, it'll all be wrapped up pretty like a bow and everyone and everything taken care of. One big happy family." I stood loose-lipped, but words hung at the back of my mind, pretending to do something else, scared to death to make their way out of my mouth. "And you know what the best part about it is?" Morgan pointed a pen at me like a sword. "History. You, me, you, Weta, all of us making grand history. The world watching us like an audience watches a stage. We're shaping the world, reshaping it in our image to make a lasting mark. It's grand, isn't it, Weta?" His thin lips smiled at her. Not with lechery, but pure mad grandiosity. Sure, Weta agreed tentatively. Grand is the word, Governor. He did it to her, too. All right then, Hank. Thanks for coming up and getting things straight. I've got a meeting at 1:30 I need to get to, and you all have a vote at 2:00, I think. Morgan winked at me as he put on his coat and walked out the door. I imagined tripping him and choking him as he writhed under me and on the floor. Instead, I stood slack-jawed. Weta looked at me, staring. Glad you came up to settle this, Hank. I was having a hard time making myself understood, but you really came through and laid it all down for him. Get off it, Weta. You and I both know this thing's going to come off through the force of Richard Morgan's personality no matter what we do. He's either a prophet or he's crazy. Most likely he's a crazy prophet. In any case, it's best to arrange safe passage through the coming months. I'd almost convinced myself. Maybe it was for the best. Yeah, you're right, of course. I don't know. The whole thing stinks. Do you think we could throw a wrench in it? I met her piercing gaze. Yeah, we could. And it'd pass anyway, and we'd get thrown in the pit while Morgan barbecued brisket over us. Yeah, let's go. Weta opened the door and we walked down the Capitol building. Steve, 5, Austin, Texas.
For everything?
Screeched the overlarge man with the Mighty Ducks t-shirt. Yes, I said, looking once more at the pile of half-rotting books, old Reader's Digest condensed books, and dog-eared National Geographics. The man leaned back and eyed me with a look of possible comprehension.
You mean a quarter apiece?
The man did not comprehend, and I did not reach over and grab him by the throat and carry him out of the door by his jugular. No, I'm afraid we'll end up donating or recycling most of this. We can only give you a quarter for the lot. The man's eyes bugged out. I didn't poke him in his bugging out eyes.
You're trying to rip me off. These old books are worth something. Look at this Bridges of Madison County. It's a classic.
Sir, I'm sorry, but we just don't need any of this. If you have a garage sale or some friends you could give them to, you might do a little better.
Forget it. I'll just hold on to them. I'm not going to just give them to you.
The man trailed off muttering as he gathered the refuse back together in a box and hauled it through the back door. Thanks for... The man slammed the door in my face. Never coming in here again, I finished to myself. I flew out the door at 5:30 and stopped at the grocery store to wander aimlessly around reading signs. There seemed to be more signs than food. No grapes today, due to political troubles in California. No grapes were delivered today. No fish today, due to labor strikes in the trucking industry. No fish were delivered today. Fish, fruit, and meats were disrupted, but Pringles and peanut butter were still on the shelves. I stopped cold by the toaster pastries. I always looked for grape and vanilla fudge, and they never had them. Today the shelves were filled with them. I grabbed 2 boxes each. The place was virtually empty. This grocery store used to be packed 24 hours a day. I would come at 3 a.m. and have to wait in a long line. Now, checkout clerks sat around reading magazines. Shoppers looked furtive and restless. I bought my pastries, a tombstone pizza, and left. I almost ran into a tanned, weathered man in a brown leather jacket as I tore out the door.
Hey, buddy, can you spare a couple bucks?
An avowed sucker, I pulled out a couple of bills.
Thanks, man, you're a right sort. So many people a lot richer than you won't give you the time of day anymore. Afraid they'll get dragged away just for helping a guy.
What do you mean dragged away? I edged away, trying not to get involved in a long conversation.
Oh, that Texas Army been rounding up all homeless in bags and busting them off God knows where. Some kind of army thing, I think. Supposed to get us off the streets and make better men of us. They won't get me, though. I got an address. Can't make you go if you got an address.
Well, good luck.
Thank you, sir.
The man laughed and walked off down the parking lot, watching for cops and security agents. I dumped my groceries in the back seat and slipped behind the wheel. I turned on the radio and headed home. You're listening to American Belief Radio. For American Belief Radio News, I'm Jerry Martinez. Nothing happened. The silence continued for what seemed like a half a minute. Then the announcer broke back in. Attention, ladies and gentlemen, we've just received important news from the Capitol. In a surprise forced vote on the Texas Senate floor just minutes ago, the Texas secession bill passed by 2 votes. The Oklahoma Congress is right now voting on emergency legislation merging their legislature with the Republic of Texas. We'll have more later in this netcast. Hurricane Ronald swept through southern Florida yesterday, leaving hundreds dead and thousands injured. Miami buildings were still burning, and most of southern Florida was without power. The U.S. military, already busy with federal business, has promised to provide all the troops they can spare. Residents are also receiving help from the Caribbean Alliance countries.
The California Peace Party reached what they called a victory for community today. The coalition of gangs and community groups obtained an agreement by Governor Yokimari to be recognized as the majority party in the state assembly. The Peace Corps already has a majority on the Los Angeles City Council. Many states criticized Governor Yokimari for dealing with terrorists. These are not terrorists, but frustrated people. A lot of the Corps is made up of mothers and businessmen. We are dealing with disenfranchised communities, not crime bosses. The criminals would like things to stay as they are. Once again, within the last half hour, the Texas legislature sent a bill of secession to the governor, which, if signed, would make Texas the first state to secede since 1861. Oklahoma introduced a bill which would put their legislature under Texas control if Governor Morgan signs the bill as expected. Also, community uprisings are reported throughout Louisiana in support of the Texas secession. Some raised the old Confederate flag or the flag of Texas over post offices and courthouses. Finally, the South African Republic recognized the Lakota Nation today and moved to open ties with them at a meeting of the United Sovereign Nations of Africa. Candel, 1, Los Angeles. I shut off the netcast and leaned back in my chair and pondered the horrible plaster job of my ceiling. I thought about Steve out in Texas. Horrible. Why he hadn't taken my invitation to join the California Peace Party, I couldn't tell you. But that's the way he is, sort of conservatively arrogant and liberal. Me, I'm not like that. More down to earth, positively liberal. I do my job, which makes me feel active and good, and then I go home and don't worry about my conscience. That's why I signed up with the CPP's Press Cultural Division. I do some slightly subversive things with words, protect cultural integrity, and I feel good about myself without shooting a gun or being assassinated. The phone rang. Lieutenant Candel here. I recited my title dutifully, despite the fact I abhor all the pseudo-military garbage the cultural staff has to go through. Why I even have to have a title, I don't know, but at least make me a reporter or editor or something, not lieutenant. Hey, lieutenant. Okay, let's be honest. When Stephanie sang the title, it sounded positively alluring. Shall we celebrate the beginning of political bureaucracy with a beer and pizza? All right, Steph, want to meet at your place? Actually, meet me at HQ. I want to show you the new command structure, too. I drove down to Hollywood and Cahuenga to meet Steph at the LA Peace Party headquarters. We still housed ourselves in the same old brick office building we started with on the northeast corner of the intersection. The LA Peace Corps had once been small, but now that it had evolved into the California Peace Party, our little office was crammed. But the higher-ups thought it better to keep a continuous local profile than move into some shiny high-rise complex. Besides, now we had City Hall and the Capitol for our own personal use. The Cultural Affairs Department, which handled press relations and local cultural preservation, stuffed itself into one half of the second floor. The smell was atrocious. Most of us worked from our desk sets at home to avoid some sort of critical mass explosion that would assuredly take place if we all showed up in the office at once. Don't get me wrong, I don't hate my job. I feel good about the things I've done. I worked hard to keep the city from bulldozing the south central part of the city to build an office complex. I've also done a lot of cultural work, setting up community groups in the heavily Latino South Pasadena. Sometimes I feel a little weird about being the only Anglo from my sector, but nobody else seemed to mind. I avoided the old double-door elevator. It scared me a little. It always locked on the verge of failure. It always looked on the verge of failure. Not that I'm claustrophobic, but I get impatient real fast. I'd go bonkers stuck in an elevator for more than 5 minutes. I bounded up the stairs to the department. I forged my way through the small decaying lunch bags, old umbrellas, and power tools into Steph's office. Steph sat facing away from the door, working at her desk. She turned as soon as I burst in. She was gorgeous, long black hair and deep chestnut eyes set narrowly on a wide face, and she wore this bright pink lipstick. Like most CPPers, she had joined to stop the violence and take control of the situation the government let get way out of hand. She joined after her parents were killed in a robbery. I joined for different reasons. Okay, let's be honest. I'm still not sure what all of them are. It's sort of a mixture of idealism, practicality, and hope. Nothing really traumatic has ever happened to me directly, but man, I've seen enough shit go down that I had to do something. Practically, it keeps me on the side of the fence where I think the winners will eventually be. That may sound crass, but everyone's selfish to a certain extent, whether they'll admit it or not. The LA Peace Corps was an honest, no-bullshit organization, and most importantly, actually achieved something. That's as close as I'll ever get to figuring it out. Steph greeted me just inside the door. Hey, Mark, you made good time. Come on into the Commodore's office. Commodore, ugh. It made me want to puke. The guy was more like president of the Rotary Club. I don't think the Commodore had ever seen a gun outside of the movies. I wanted you to see this before we eat. I think you'll be more in the mood. She leered at me in a delightfully unnerving way. Steph picked up a sheet of paper entitled California Peace Party Hierarchy and handed it to me. She pointed to a place near the top which read Cultural Undersecretary Mark Kandel, then pointed to her own name next to Cultural Secretary. Yow! I looked at her with ecstatic bemusement. You know, I'm tired of working for you. She eyed me mischievously. I about melted into the floor. Well, you could sign up for the National Guard. I mean, the California Peace Militia. I'm sure they could use another grunt on the Nevada border. She stared at me with a look that had absolutely no relation to her words. Nevada? The look of play receded from my face. This is where our relationship always hit the rocks. We should have never talked internal politics, but of course at the time it was absolutely impossible. We had irreconcilable differences regarding the use of force. I was entirely against it, but she thought it was unavoidable. It was a trait I should have paid more attention to. Yes, she abruptly looked down. The militia is gathering on the border of Nevada, purely precautionary and wholly provocative. The NPP has almost got enough votes in Carson City to repeal the party attainder the Democrats forced through and call for an alliance vote. So that means we're not totally demilitarizing. I cautiously tried to avoid a shouting match, which I had a history of starting. Stephanie was more the calm, vicious type. I had the temper. Actually, yes, it does. The military arm of the party will fill up the California militia's branch of the government. Well, not branch, but you know what I mean. The Peace Party now has its members in the California National Guard, just like every other governmental office. However, I raised an eyebrow. I immediately wished I hadn't. Why couldn't I be sunny and encouraging? Don't make me sick. At least I could have been quiet, though. Don't do that, Mark. All that will happen is a few of us will go to Carson City in an advisory capacity. The MPP is absolutely capable of pulling this off on its own and is 100% for full integration. So wait, you're saying we won't cross the border? I ventured. Well, just a few of us from the Peace Party and the entire California Peace Militia. Well, not the whole thing, silly, just the ones on the border. Besides, we'll be safe in Carson City and we're only cultural advisors anyway. Oh, yes, of course. And we all know how innocent culture is. Yes, we do. She took the bait of my joke and tried to regain the earlier mood. Let's go get something to eat. We nixed the pizza and headed to the Dresden Room. A quiet, cheesy atmosphere of cocktail music and faux elegance always seemed to smooth out the evening. We took a table in the corner, far away from the singing. Stephanie visibly relaxed when we walked through the door. I love this place. I took her hand. Yeah, remember the first time we came here? I was trying to recruit you. Yeah, and I was telling you what bullshit elitist manipulators all political parties are. Imagine me being difficult. That's why we needed you, because you were dangerous. You could have blown the whole thing if you weren't on our side. Don't patronize me. I flailed at her with both hands. She battled me off with a swizzle stick. You better eat that olive before you hurt someone with it. The olive drooped from the end of her swizzle stick. You eat it. She held it up in front of her mouth. I leaned forward toward the olive. Why should I? It's your olive. I half whispered. So I'm a cheeseball when it comes to romance. So what? It worked. Don't you want it? With mock puzzlement, she leaned closer, putting the olive dangerously close to her lips. Well, if you insist. I leaned in and met only with the kiss I'd counted on. The olive ended up on the floor. After a few minutes, I caught my breath. We're going to get thrown out of here for not being lonely and depressed if we keep this up. Our dinner came, and Stephanie tried to keep the conversation off the peace party, but I couldn't help myself. It was important, and I couldn't just let it lie. I'll just be glad when all this military stuff is over. I'm not in this for the banners and glory. I think it's becoming too much about status. She leaned back and sighed. Look, Mark, you can't always complain about the hierarchy and the authority. Sometimes you just have to flow with it. When it becomes abusive, then you fight it. But if the CPP had always been looking over its shoulder at its own members, it would never have California or even LA. We would be an ineffectual third party like the socialist workers, constantly purging ourselves and arguing and never advancing because we wouldn't trust ourselves enough to advance. I understand that. I really did. But it seemed like there should be some sort of middle ground. Why do we have to move military into Nevada? Why can't our advisors do it alone? I let the question stand. She glared at me. You annoy the hell out of me, Kandel. Okay, I'd done it. I deserved it. But I'd stood up for my principles, right? Stephanie's eyes drilled into my skull. What do you want me to say? I don't control the military. You're the one who's always going on about how you're glad you're not in a position of responsibility and you just want to do your part and that's it. That's all I do. I just have a slightly bigger part, that's all. That's fine, but it doesn't answer my question. She began to steam and I needed to press the escape valve quick. Look, let's go to my place and get out of the smoke and lounge music. We paid our bill and left quickly. The ride to my place was a long exercise in unpleasant silence. The 110 slid by without comment as it narrowed into a virtual tunnel near South Pasadena. My apartment was cut out of half a house. It had 3 rooms, a bathroom, and a hallway that served as a kitchen. Stephanie threw herself down on an old brown armchair underneath a poster which portrayed the history of the CPP through bumper stickers. L.A. United, from the unification of gangs and mafias into the Los Angeles Peace Party, which later became the CPP. T.M. Latifis, from their cultural unity campaign. Latino, African, Japanese, combined into one word. CPP and Prop 98, from the ballot item that let the Peace Corps in as a major party. CPP for People, from the first statewide election campaign. And CPP Let's Go, which referred to both the independence movement and the takeover of the California legislature. Steph lit a cigarette. I walked back in the room holding a glass of whiskey. You want one? She held out her cigarette. No. Look, I don't see why you can't see my point about the hierarchy in the military. This is supposed to be a people's party, and here we are forcing the governor of Nevada, practically at gunpoint, to hand the state over to us so we can take over, and then what? Oregon? Washington? Of course not. The peace parties aren't strong enough, and you know that. Wait! She stopped me before I started in on her last statement. And we won't interfere in any state where the peace party doesn't have the support of the people. Taking Nevada isn't a military operation. The military is only needed to keep the moneyed interests from crushing the NPP initiative. Okay, so it's not meant to be evil, but guns, man. I just don't go for that. I plopped down in front of her on the floor, leaned back, and began to massage my shoulders. She began to massage my shoulders. A subtle argumentative ploy, but one I enjoyed. I thought back to why she had bothered to recruit me in the first place. We met on a bus and somehow fell to talking. I was fanatically cynical at the time, and she tried to show me that something good could be accomplished. The CPP was doing it. I, of course, resisted her completely, and this argument was one in a series dating from that first one. Her optimistic idealism clashed pretty hard sometimes with my more cynical brand. Poor guy. Her soft words fell pleasantly against my neck. Yeah, I know, I've got it rough. I'm on the inside and have a 98% chance of being behind the guns. Maybe I'd feel differently. She was tired of listening to me and knew the one way to shut me up. Her arms slipped down on my sides and she slid behind me on the floor. I mean, come on. Sometimes denial is fun, right? You're making it difficult to compose political theories. I turned around to face her and the political talk stopped for the night. Steve, 6, Austin, Texas. In an attempt to assess the possibility of legally leaving Texas, I spent the day running down citizenship information for myself and Helen. I left the Department of Human Services bleary-eyed and worn out. The new Republic of Texas rules about citizenship affected even the most mundane things like parking and paying your water bill. When I got home, I shut the door and fell down on the floor of the apartment. After staring at the ceiling for about 10 minutes, I finally decided to absorb some mindless entertainment. I turned on the desk set and skimmed video servers until I caught a rerun of a nighttime talk show. And you'll never believe this, a special report leaked out today. It seems the Texas secession is being backed by Dallas Cowboys coach Fred Smarten. Yeah, he figures he can finally get a national championship if he only has to play Houston and San Antonio. The audience laughed. I clicked to the next channel as Helen came through the door. How did it go? I genuinely feared the response. Rotten. Her eyes looked nowhere in particular. She huffed and puffed into the kitchen and set down a grocery bag. I picked up some onions, chicken, and chipotle sauce to make tenga. I figure I needed to treat myself to something. I also got a nice Chianti. Wasn't it strange how empty the store was? Oh, you mean the fruit and stuff? She whisked off into the next room. Yeah, that too. I stood up to make myself more available for conversation. But I mean, there were hardly any people shopping there. There was nobody in line. Yeah, I didn't think about it, but I guess you're right. She unloaded the groceries with a little too much fervor. I helped her put things away and gingerly approached the subject we were both avoiding. So what happened at the employment place? Absolutely nothing. All of us sat in the outer office of the Employment Commission holding our little green tickets and no one spoke to us until 5 o'clock when they told us to leave and come back tomorrow. They didn't tell you anything else? Helen slammed a can of tomatoes down and looked at the countertop. She sighed and her voice began to shake.
Steve, I don't want to talk about it, okay? I cried all the way to the grocery store, and if... I came up and quickly put my arms around her. She sobbed on my shoulder for a few minutes. I'm sorry. She whimpered just the way I hated. It's okay. I asked Kip at work about the lead he had with the UN provisional staff. He gave me a number. I'm never going to get a job with them, not with a degree in art history and a half-finished geology master's. Look, your years in management at the library will count big with these people. They're going to need someone good with information resources, and they won't have to pay librarians' salaries. Besides, the fact that you're not a Texan will work for you in this case. I didn't really believe anything I was saying, but it seemed important not to let Helen's hopes sink. She looked up at me with hopeless eyes. Speaking of which, did you find out if we have to get married? Yes, we don't. As long as you're on the lease with me, a working Texan, you're fine. Besides, since you were born in Texas, I think you'll be higher on the list of citizenship. In any case, we may not want to get locked in here. I'm considered a friendly foreign national of the state of Illinois, and I'm free to go whenever I want. As long as you don't have citizenship, that makes it easier for you to go with me. Helen stared at me. Her eyes glistened with tears, and her lower lip stuck out. Why can't they just leave us alone? They have been, for too long. I squeezed her tight, then moved away quickly in case she caught the tiny amount of insincerity growing in my voice. I punched up the news netcast without thinking how she might respond. More and more parishes in western Louisiana are declaring themselves part of the Republic of Texas. President Richard Morgan welcomed them into the newly formed republic. Louisiana's legislature voted by a slim margin to allow parishes self-determination. The African sovereign nations recognized the Lakota Nation today. The Lakota also agreed on a permanent ceasefire with the U.S. government. UN regional negotiator Alain Pascual reached the settlement by allowing the U.S. to claim oversight rights while guaranteeing the Lakota complete sovereignty. The president delivered a special address after the signing. And it proves we can peacefully and without bloodshed settle our differences and move ahead to the betterment of all. Beep! This is not a test. This is not a test. Citizens of the states of Arkansas and Kansas are advised to seek shelter and stay indoors. Do not join the fighting except to defend your own living area. Do not take up arms. The U.S. Army is providing assistance to local National Guardsmen. Stay sheltered and indoors until further notice. Beep! This is American Belief Radio. Reports are coming in that Republic of Texas has opened fire on U.S. troops in Texarkana, Fort Smith, and Fayetteville, Arkansas, as well as Wichita, Kansas. Jack Wilson is in Fayetteville. A voice crackled over the sounds of gunfire and explosions. Yes, Greg, I don't know how much time I'll have. We're staying in a motel here on the State Line Road, US 71, which runs along the Texas border, when suddenly, without any warning, the whole strip came under mortar fire. The reporter began to cough. All the guests ran away from the highway, and we're now hunkered down in the basement of some friendly Texarkanans. The most dreadful moment came when about five fire trucks responding to the various alarms came screaming up the road and were all hit by the shelling. Texarkana at this point is missing a large part of its fire department, and there are fires visible all over this part of the city. Any idea why the heavy use of artillery? Whitney interjected. Well, Wilson said thank you to someone off mic. Well, Greg, no, I guess. He laughed. That's about as clear as I'm going to get. I just got handed a sheet. A large blast ripped through my speakers. We're going to have to get moving again. I just got handed a sheet that lists an estimated 30 dead. 17 of those were under 18 and 45 injuries reported from the hospital. Those numbers seem odd to me, Greg, but I don't think anything is operating smoothly here right now. Another blast came over the speakers, followed by the sound of plaster falling. Listen, Greg, we're out of here now. The family's dragging me out of the door. From Texarkana, Arkansas, Jack Wilson reporting. Thanks, Jack. Our thoughts are with you. The Texas Army has moved into Arkansas and Kansas. We have no official reports of any kind, but Texarkana and Wichita seem to be receiving the heaviest shelling. The Texans apparently were expecting heavy resistance in those towns. In addition, the California militia has reportedly entered Nevada to aid the Nevada Peace Party. No shooting has been reported there. The Nevada governor fled the capital, and the Peace Party members of the Nevada legislature voted to suspend Congress until further notice. Kolbrowski, 3, East St. Louis, Illinois, eastbound I-70. I almost ran the car off the road. I turned to Rob Gary, whom I'd picked up from work downtown. Did they say what I thought they said? Yep, Texas is invading Arkansas and Kansas. Gary almost sounded giddy. And California must be invading Nevada. Peacefully, of course. I couldn't hold back my sarcasm. Man, this is getting too close.
I know.
The St. Louis Arch slowly sank beneath a hill behind us. If they get past Little Rock, nothing will stop until they get here. Via Memphis.
I silently calculated to myself. This changed a lot.
It was time.
Yeah, I wonder which one they'll destroy first, Gehrig wondered aloud.
Neither.
Gehrig threw a look at me. He freaked when I talked like that, but it had to be done. We went to high school together in Greenville and had known each other almost all our lives. Gehrig had trained in criminology. Some of the best times we'd had were just sitting around and drinking and arguing about philosophy, psychology, and politics. Ever since I joined the Ozarkians, we'd had less to talk about. I thought my secrecy was for his own good, but the Texans marching up the river changed a lot. He looked at me without realizing his life would soon change. It was both our fates.
Are you coming over for poker tonight?
Such an innocuous question from a man about to lose his innocence.
No, I've got a meeting.
I saw that he felt the horrible import of my words.
Another psych association thing?
Yeah, and I think you should come.
There, I'd done it.
No turning back now. Gehrig was in part way whether he wanted to or not.
But what was I all flipped off about?
The feds weren't paying any attention to us. We had people way up in the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, and even the mayor tacitly approved of us.
Why should I come?
I could tell he was apprehensive.
Because it's... we need you.
I mean, your perspective on the criminal mind and the use of firearms would be good. John will be there.
I tried to get close to the truth without really saying anything. It sounded stupid, but suddenly I felt if I could get Gehrig to come on his own, then somehow I wouldn't have to feel responsible.
I have a degree in criminology and can shoot a gun. That does not sound like the requirements for a psych association.
Gehrig searched for more information.
I stared at Gehrig, gauging him. I knew he was too smart to be led blindly. I also knew if I told him about the Ozark Defense Group that I could never let him out. I never recruited my friends, only strangers who had inquired about the organization through various channels. But I knew Gehrig and knew he was smarter than his low-paying job. He could shoot a gun, and he could shoot it well. Rob's advisor at the University of Illinois wanted him to go on to graduate work in criminology because he was so good with strategy. I knew all this and knew that despite and because of the risk, we needed Gehrig.
The Psychology Association has a few members that meet afterward, Rob. We're part of a group known as Ozarkia. It's a network of militias across the Ozark area which are right now drawing battle plans to defend the area against Big Brother Texas.
I kept my eyes on the road, ready for any kind of response.
Gehrig stared straight ahead and said nothing.
I've already told you too much by telling you that, Rob, I continued.
If you don't want in, tell me now, and all I ask is that you never mention this again. Even if you do, I'll deny it and someone will pay you back.
I feared that the most.
Gehrig continued to stare ahead. After a big old silence, he finally said, I'm in.
That's it for part 3 of Boiling Point.